second edition of The Responsive Chord. And Anton, we've been talking a little bit about politics, and your father did a lot of ad campaigns for different politicians. And in this day and time, it occurs to me, I know that he used some of his expertise as ads for politicians, but he was also aware of the unpaid kind of, they're not ads, but the different ways that they're presented in the media. And we've just come through, this is now 2017, we've just come through an election, and Donald Trump is now president. And it seems to me that he is a master at getting that free advertisement, so to speak. I mean, he's a master manipulator of the media. They've just kind of fallen right in line with him and just given him all sorts of information. At least here we are in April of 2017. I don't know the future of it, but here we are. So do you have anything to say about that and how that is unfolding?
Yeah, well, Trump certainly has used the free media to an incredible effect. The media landscape was very different at the time that my father wrote the book. What's so strange about it is that the book is almost more appropriate today than it was when it was written. Because so much of what it talks about, it can be applied very specifically to social media and to viral media. You know, Trump gained so much of his political traction over Twitter, over the social media, by, you know, creating these pithy little things that, you know, whether or not they were factually true, whether or not, you know, they were politically correct, they really just, he reached people at a gut level that, in a way that they hadn't been used to being reached by politicians. And that was a very powerful phenomenon. My dad was actually not a great believer in unpaid media at the time. And that's just because the unpaid media at the time meant things like public service announcements, which, you know, would get run at late at night and stuff, and was very hard to control and did not get nearly the number of engaged eyeballs that the free media of today, you know, the Facebooks, the Instagram, the Twitters, the way those things reach out to people as parts of their social lives. So he would actually use paid media as an entry to really viral response. You know, you mentioned before that the Daisy ad was only run once, right? That was paid media. It was run on broadcast television. But the message was so powerful that people were talking about it, that they were calling each other about it, that as a result, you know, word spread, and the ad itself became a news story. So the ad was played over and over and over and over on television and spread virally, you know, even, and this is in 1964, right? And in the same way, he would make an ad, and he would say at the end of it sometimes, if you're interested in more information about this, call blah, blah, blah. And he would have several phone lines at our home, the home that I grew up in, where his office was, that were just silently playing outgoing messages all day and night, and people would call the number and, you know, to follow up on a 30-second ad or a 60-second ad, and they'd hear a 3 or 4 minute message, and then they'd give the phone number to someone else. So, you know, before the infrastructure existed for viral media, he was making it happen in these unusual ways. And it was all possible because he would tap into these deep feelings that really, and messages that resonated with the people who were hearing it. It's like, I haven't heard that. Yeah, you ought to hear that. And Trump did manage to do very much the same thing.
There was something that he said that he talked about, which is very provocative. He was talking about these feedback technologies, let's say, of this kind of way where you can Twitter, retwitter, and do all that viral stuff, that these, he said that they were about to embalm or bury network television and Hollywood film distribution. And he said it was like a marriage between the Undertaker and the corpse. You know, and because they're marrying these old environments for investment purposes, the behind the scene, what they're doing. And I'm thinking of let's say, what's in the news these days is something called bots. Mm-hmm. And where when you have viral media is also the shadow side of it, is that you get all these different people making something viral, but they're not real people that are really toned into the message. Mm-hmm. Do you have something to say about that?
Well, absolutely. I mean, what you're giving really is the argument for why it's so important to understand the modern, you know, electronic digital communication process, because people are so susceptible to bots and to fake news because they don't understand the mechanisms by which they work. You know, if you're used to, well, here's an example. You know, there was a time when you would get emails from some Nigerian prince saying they have to repatriate money and blah, 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 and they want to give it to you and you can take 10%, right? And people fell for these schemes left and right because they didn't have any precedent in their lives for someone lying to them about something like this. Nowadays, you know, it's become kind of a cliche. The understanding of this has made it into the public eyes and minds, and it's no longer the kind of threat that it was. So, of course, they come up with different kinds of scams and so on. But the principles by which fake news works and the principles of these bots that convince people that there's actually a groundswell of a movement that is just fictitious, it all relies on this new understanding of electronic media and how we react to digitally mediated messages that come so quickly at a different speed that it's a different process that's described in this book. And really, you know, I'm a little biased. I would recommend this book as, you know, as necessary for an understanding of all these crazy new phenomena and why it is that so many people are falling for fake news.
I remember an analogy that your father used, and it was in talking about the speed at which things are happening, mm-hmm. and in this new electronic environment. And he talks about in a certain speed when it was print media, you would... If your car would go into a skid, we were all taught to turn into the skid, that's the right way. But when it comes at a certain speed, when the speed gets topped out at a certain point, you need to do something else. Turning into the skid is not going to do it. And I think that that's where we are right now. We're learning that, oh, we've got to pivot or move in a different way to sort this all out. I think we're all in right in the middle of sorting it out still.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've nailed it. There is, I've heard that example too. Well, it uses it in the book, that you have to steer, in fact, in the other direction. Once you've had, there's a phase change, and above a certain velocity, the dynamics on the road are different, and you have to learn how to steer that way.
I think of it like a Star Trek warp speed. We've just gone into warp speed, and
yeah,
that's where we are.
Right, and the physics are different, right. And until you have cars that can travel faster than that speed at which it changes, you don't know that there would be any reason to steer differently. What distinguishes real news from fake news is that real news is out to provide resources. It's out to provide information. It's giving the tools for the consumer of the news to come to decisions on their own, right? I'm not talking about editorials, which are marked as editorials and so on. But, you know, journalistic standards are all about presenting the raw ingredients for the listener, the reader, to make up their own mind. Fake news is not that at all. Fake news is out to achieve a goal. And as such, real news is actually has more to do with the old book print-oriented method of communication. It's like, here's the information, you do with it as you want. Consume this information. The fake news is all about eliciting a response, and the good, good meaning talented purveyors of fake news understand how to create reactions, instantaneous reactions that drive the reader to perform actions, whether it is, you know, crafting a headline that will really get clicks and views, so that some of them, it's just that. It's just about getting clicks, right? Because they're making advertising revenue for it. Some of them, there is an ulterior goal, which is to get someone to vote a certain way in the ballot box or against a certain measure. And the mechanisms inside you that they're harnessing
right.
to get this goal are completely different from the mechanisms that you learn to make rational decisions. You're just going to be totally at the mercy of people creating feelings in you that are powerful and that guide your actions, right? And this, you know, the responsive court is a step-by-step walk through this world of fast media where things work differently and where, you know, things are coming at you so quickly that you have to make a concerted effort to step back and say, now, wait a second. You know, I just saw this headline that just gets my heart racing, my blood boiling, and I want to consume it and find out more information about it and then act on it and spread it and tell my friends because I'm infuriated. You know, that should be a warning sign.
A flashing
right?
red light.
Exactly. Telling you, slow down. Who are these people who put up this thing, you know, that I'm seeing online? And what is it that they want from me?
Right, exactly. Good advice. I'm here with Anton Schwartz. He's the son of Tony Schwartz. Tony Schwartz was a media genius, a philosopher of the new communication environment, and the author of several books, including The Responsive Cord, How Media Manipulates You, What You Buy, Who You Vote For, and How You Think. If you want to know more about the work of Anton Schwartz, who is also a jazz musician, I might say, you can go to his website, antonjazz.com, or you can go there, get to his father's work and know more about him, tonyschwartz.org, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Anton Schwartz, and he is the son of the famous Tony Schwartz, who was a media genius and the author of The Responsive Cord, How Media Manipulates You, What You Buy, Who You Vote For, and How You Think. And this book has recently been republished. A new edition is out now. Anton, let's talk a little bit. I know your father had some things to say about education and about the way young people are being taught in an old model, but they're arriving in school with a very different frame of reference. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, absolutely. The classic model for education is one of information transfer, right? The teacher knows something, one hopes. The textbook, you know, can enumerates information, it lays it out, and then you're responsible for learning that information and for reciting it back, which is, of course, it has its uses, and but it's not really coupled either to how this information is used in practice when you're grown up, nor to how we arrive at knowledge and information and understanding in the rest of the world. And more, you know, with the arrival of the electronic media, which for him meant radio and television, but for now also, for us now also include the internet, digital information, social media, mobile communication. The way that people are used to, and kids who grow up into it, are used to reacting with media and with each other is very, very, very different from the classic model.
Right.
We're used to getting messages and responding instantly. And there's a different quality of engagement to that than there is to sitting down with a book.
Well, you just take information. I mean, why memorize information? You just Google it, and you just got it at your fingertip immediately. Boom. So it's not the information that's available to us at a fingertip. It's how to think critically about it, how to put it together in different ways. I mean, it seems to me that might be a way that education could go.
Absolutely. So to a certain extent, the content of the education is going to be different, right? Let's face it, long division is an interesting thing to understand, but mostly when it's taught, it's not taught for the understanding value. It's taught so that you can divide large numbers. And no one does that anymore when they have the cell phone or the computer in front of them that they can do. Whereas we're in a world where a lot of our knowledge at a global level is mediated through statistics that we're told. And so many people have such a poor understanding of statistics, right? So that would be an incredibly valuable thing to prioritize instead.
How to know in what direction they're skewed. Like statistics, what were the questions asked for? How do we really understand statistics and the basis by which they arrived at any one statistic?
Right, and even so, even if if the statistic is completely accurate, it can lead us, if we don't know better, to make wrong inferences. So, for instance, someone has these seven symptoms that are exactly the seven symptoms of this rare, 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 rare disease. And there's a huge correlation there. But it's more likely that this person just has the common cold, which only displays three of those symptoms, but is so much more prevalent, right? So, people make erroneous statistical judgments that way that whereas if they learned a little bit more of the math, okay, I'm a little biased in math. I have a background in mathematics. And so that's a matter of content, things, the tools that are useful to know about in the digital age. There's the other issue of just how the education takes place. He talks a lot about the use of quote-unquote multimedia in the book, which at the time meant things like, watching video and film strips and, interactive sensory modalities of communication that didn't involve just books. He sort of pokes a little fun at the term, multimedia, because he thinks that it's so badly used in
yes.
his day that, if you have to say that something is a multimedia education experience, it's not doing its job, because otherwise you would just call it an educational experience. Like, you don't say, "Oh, I built a wonderful new house with such and such equipment." No, if the equipment does its job, you built the house. That's the news.
Right.
So he talks about how advanced technologies can be used in education that mirror the ways in which they're used in the lives of the children already, so that number one, the children can relate to it, the experience, much better. And number two, it is so that it actually gets at the strengths of the new media.
And to me, it seems, now this is my bias, and I come from an education background as being a former teacher, that the way that young people now are coming into the work market, they're not going to just do one job all of their lives. It's not like that anymore. So it seems to me that to offer a platform of how to better tap into our creativity, to learn better how to learn, how to approach anything in a way that's beneficial and that will support us in that pathway.
Absolutely. We need to be lifelong learners. You know, careers are very different now than they used to be. You know, gone are the days of, you know, I'm now with IBM and I'll be with IBM for 50 years and get my watch at the end of that and my retirement, right? We're all in the process of reconstructing ourselves, partly because of the advances of new technology that make, you know, the work environment change so rapidly and the business environment. So it's really important that we learn these education skills. I would say in addition to that, you know, there's extra necessity for understanding the communications principles in this book, because this book is geared partly toward general consumption, but also has been a Bible of sorts to the advertising world, both political advertising and product advertising, because it talks about how to achieve results from messages. And you know, more and more, this is something that everyone is involved in, right? It used to be that we had people in marketing, we had people in advertising, they were siloed off and, you know, it was a particular career. Nowadays, everyone is in marketing, right? You know, we're all on LinkedIn and advertising ourselves for our next job, even when we're at our current job. And even if it's not about job, you know, kids are basically building their brand on, you know, Instagram or Snapchat or Twitter or Facebook. You know, it's all about portraying a certain picture
of
yourself.
We're selling ourselves all the time.
We are. And so, you know, if that's something that you're interested in, and, you know, as a musician, I have to be concerned about my presence on social media, you know, and getting the word out about the CDs that I'm making and the touring that I'm doing. And it's essential. And even not for that, you know, you want to give a certain image of yourself.
You know, I'm just reminded, my partner, Michael Toms, who, as our listeners know, has passed on, he often would say, we wrote a book together called True Work, Doing What You Love and Loving What You Do. And in that whole book and putting that together, he was very clear about if you are an artist, like you are, Anton, you're a jazz musician, you're an artist, you can't live just in that artistry. You've got to own the whole thing. You've got to understand how you're projecting your image, as you just said, out in the world. And you can have somebody help you with that, but you can't just divorce yourself completely from it and say, oh, I don't want to do the selling part. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, you know, there are people who manage to do that. You have to be extremely successful and generally not as a jazz musician. You know, it helps if you're in a market that has a more, you know, a broad, better remuneration. There are different senses in which that's true. You know, I think of myself as primarily, first and foremost, a human being, and secondarily, an artist, you know, a musician. The things that I express through my music, you know, are, I think, general, you know, and applicable to all. And I think it's just a shame not to have those things infuse the rest of my life as well. And, you know, I'm interested in the visuals of the CDs that I make. I'm interested in the whole experience when someone comes to a concert of mine. Now, it may be that my job is to present music primarily and make that the center of it, but it's a broader experience than that. And I think it's missing out on a lot not to let those areas of your work infuse your whole life.
Well said. Anton, I want to thank you so much for being part of New Dimensions today.
This has been such a pleasure, Justine.
It's been mine as well. If you want to know more about just exactly what Anton was talking about, because we're all part of it, you can pick up the book, The Responsive Chord, that was written by his father, Tony Schwartz, The Responsive Chord, How Media Manipulate You, What You Buy, Who You Vote For, and How You Think. And to know more about his work, you can go to tonyschwartz.org. To know more about Anton's work, go to antonjazz.com. Or you can give there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3614.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Hirsch Wilson, author of Dog Lessons, Learning the Important Stuff from Our Best Friends. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the lessons dogs teach us.
Awesome. AWESOME. Adjective. Definition 1. Informal. Extremely good. CJSF 90.1 FM has been making awesome campus community radio programming on the FM dial for 20 years. Definition 2. Formal. Extremely impressive or daunting or inspiring great admiration. Listener support for CJSF 90.1 FM is awesome. Support campus community radio today by donating to CJSF's fund drive at cjsf.ca/donate.
You're listening to CJ